Hello, friends. It's Masters Week, which means it's the end of the college basketball season, and we're back with another episode of the 3-Bid League podcast. I'm Matt, joined by Tyler as always, and we planned on recapping VCU and St. Louis's tournament games pretty soon after they happened, but you all know what happened. There's not a whole lot for us to talk about at this point, so we pretty much put that off as much as possible, which is why we're back now after a few weeks off, and it's time to talk about some more mid-major basketball for the first time in a while.
Yeah, we want to wrap up the season by going through each team. We're going to set the timer for 4 minutes for each squad. It will go off if we go further than that. This is not PTI. We will actually acknowledge the clock. Although I get the feeling that some of these early teams, we won't need the full 4 minutes.
Yeah, there's not enough material to talk about these first couple teams for that much time. I mean, you'd have to be a diehard fan of some of these bottom-of-the-barrel schools, which we're not, so we'll try to keep it short, get to the good stuff at the end. But without further ado, so we're going to do this based on the preseason rankings, which were given by the coaches back in October, except for we're going to go in reverse order so we have more of the good teams at the end. That might make it a little bit more interesting, but so anyway, we'll start at 14 in the preseason rankings with the Fordham Rams, who went 12-20 and 3-15 in the A-10. So the A-10 coaches, they actually got this one right. Fordham finished in 14th, which isn't too hard to predict given how most of their seasons go.
Yeah, for a 3-15 last place season, I actually think that it was a positive year for the Rams, because we found out that Nick Honor is the kind of guy that you should be able to build around. He and Jalen Cobb rolled in, had a pair of great freshman seasons. Honor ends up making the all-freshman team. And there's a lot of stuff that needs to be fixed, namely Honor's three-point shooting, which is not that great at just 33%. But if they stick around, there's a foundation for Fordham.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. That's been a trend for Fordham over the years where they have a couple freshmen that break out and seem to have some promise. So if they can keep these guys around, that might be a good sign. Looking at Fordham's season, there wasn't too many great things to look at. They beat Rutgers at home, and Rutgers ended up, although they weren't a tournament team, it was their best season in a while, their best since they joined the A-10, so that's a good accomplishment for them, beating a team in their region that's a power conference school. I have no idea when the last time Fordham beat someone in the Big Ten, but my guess is that it's been a while. One other thing I wanted to note, before the season we talked about Prokop Slanina as being an impact player. It turned out he was out for the season. If they could bring him back, that could be a good sign. That was one of their problems over the course of the season. They didn't have a whole lot of size. And overall, you know, we didn't have any high hopes for Fordham, so this season didn't really come as a surprise to us.
Yeah, we come out of this with one thing for Fordham, and that's hope. They have some good freshmen. Ty Perry showed some flashes too, although he really didn't do much in the conference play. And the most important thing for Fordham, our prayers continue to go out to the junior forward Jesse Bunting, who had a small stroke near the end of the season. We haven't heard any updates on that, which I would say is probably a good thing because it means nothing bad happened. But as far as we know, Jesse Bunting is recovering fine, and hopefully he'll be back on the court next year.
All right, so with that, I don't have too much else to say about Fordham. Do you have anything to add, or should we move on to a slightly better team?
Timer's already reset.
All right, so we will move on to the 13th team in the A-10 preseason predictions, which was the GW Colonials. They finished at 9-24, 4-14 in the A-10, and things fell apart quickly. They started the season against Stony Brook with a 22-0 lead, and unfortunately, that was the high point in the very first game because they ended up blowing that game. Their second game of the season, interestingly, they lost to their current head coach, which is Jamian Christian, who was at Siena last season. And, you know, another team, GW, just like Fordham, we had no expectations for them. So, finishing near the bottom of the conference, that was expected.
Yeah, GW kind of tricked us winning two early A-10 games and making us think that they might actually be decent. It turned out that that was not true. I'm worried about the future of this program. The Maurice Joseph thing kind of came as a surprise, and I think largely had to do with the fact that their athletic department is in shambles after some scandals involving Mike Longergan. But now they lose Terry Nolan, who I thought was by far their best player, and a guy who was weirdly coming off the bench for them all year. We'll see. Jamie and Christian has a very limited track record, but the biggest problem for him is not going to be his experience, but rather the fact that GW just doesn't have a ton left there. It's going to be a tough rebuilding job, and at the very least, the first 2 years are going to be rough for Christian.
Yeah, this is the worst we've seen GW's program in a while. Just going back at their season, you said it, they started the year winning at St. Joe's by 14. I remember watching that, and I came away very impressed. Obviously, we thought much differently of St. Joe's at that point in the year, so it turned out that wasn't that big of a deal. And that ended up being their best win of the year. Otherwise, they beat LaSalle, Fordham, and UMass in conference, so, you know, not too much to be happy about for their season. I was impressed by a couple guys. DJ Williams, a transfer from Illinois, he led the Colonials in scoring, had a big impact. And then I thought Maceo Jack as a sophomore, I actually thought at times he was their best player over Terry Nolan, especially later in the season. So hopefully if those guys can build on their seasons with GW, they might get better, but I think you're right, it's just going to take some time.
Yeah, and so long as Arnaldo Toro turns out to be healthy after his season-ending injury back at the end of November, him, DJ Williams, and Javier Langarica together will form a nice front court, but guard play is going to be a problem again for GW.
All right, so we will move on to the 12th team in the A-10 preseason rankings, which was the LaSalle Explorers. They went 10-21, 8-10 in the A-10. Led by first-year coach Ashley Howard. As we all know, they started the year 0-10, one of the very last Division I teams to win a game. And I think at that point, we weren't sure how many A-10 games they could win. I think they certainly surprised us, though, by finishing 9th in the conference with 8 A-10 wins.
Yeah, my biggest takeaway for LaSalle is that they got themselves, at the very least, a decent coach in Ashley Howard. I really don't think that this was a team with a ton of talent this year, especially given that even when Pookie Powell was in the lineup, he was often hampered by injuries, playing limited minutes. And yeah, LaSalle loses him after a really an up-and-down senior season, but I think that the program should, well, they really should be looking up, just given that I think they found the right coach.
Yeah, you know, looking back, I think we kind of overreacted to their 0-10 start. I think LaSalle probably played the most difficult non-conference schedule in the A-10. Just some of the teams that they lost to: Temple, Florida, Miami, Northwestern, Villanova, a decent Penn team in a Big Five rivalry game. They actually almost beat Villanova. They went down by 7 points in that one. And overall, their A-10 season, even though they finished with a losing record, you gotta be happy with that. I think Ashley Howard did a good job. Obviously, Pookie Powell was the leader of this team, and he'll be gone next year, so it's gonna be a bit of a transition. But I feel like you gotta be pretty happy with how the season played out. I mean, they were literally at the bottom. They had nowhere to go but up, and, you know, they didn't give up. After just a terrible start to the year, they turned it around, had some competitive games in the A-10, so I'm definitely looking forward to see what they can do next year.
Yeah, one more transition year coming up with Isaiah Dees, Saul Fury, and Tracy Carter all going into their senior years. Those guys were really the best that they had when Powell was struggling with his injuries at the end of the year. So it's going to be another transition season, probably somewhere in the 9-10-11 range. And then the season after that, we're going to really see what Ashley Howard can mold these guys into.
All right, so now we're going to get into one of the better teams in the A-10 last year, and that was Duquesne, who was predicted to get 11th by the coaches. They ended up going 19-13 overall after a solid non-conference, and then they went 10-8 in the A-10, got the 7 seed in the A-10 tournament. And I feel like I should give you most of the 4 minutes here. You probably know a lot more about Duquesne's season than I do, so you can start us off here.
Yeah, them being picked 11th was stupid. I said it at the time, and it turned out to be right. Like, they showed a ton of promise. No seniors on the team, no juniors once Mike Lewis had transferred and Kellen Taylor decided to focus on football. And what we saw was a team capable of hanging with anyone in the A-10. They gave Davidson a great run at Davidson early in the season. They nearly beat VCU at home without Sincere Carey. Weirdly, Duquesne has still never beaten either of those teams since they got into the A-10, but they gave them great games. Both of their games against Dayton were pretty competitive. They went 1-1 against SLU. They played everyone extremely well except for the Bonnies, who just beat the crap out of them twice for some reason. But for me, it's all about where Sincere Carey is going to take this team. He proved this year that he has something special. And we've been sucked into this before, whether it's Damian Saunders or Melquan Boulding or TJ McConnell or even Eric Williams Jr. Actually, I want to throw Derek Coulter in that list too. And we've had so many of these guys, they end up just leaving. Williams, McConnell, Boulding, they were all gone. Coulter got cancer and was never the same after. Damian Saunders was a really good player, but they never put the guys around him to take them to the promised land. This might be the best chance Duquesne has had since TJ McConnell was around of making the tournament. Sincere Carey is a special guy, and that's really all that matters coming out of this Duquesne season.
Yeah, no, I think Duquesne definitely is headed in the right direction. This was definitely their best season in some time, probably since the TJ McConnell days. And overall, they didn't have any marquee wins over the course of the season. Most impressive was probably SLU, as you mentioned, and then they beat Radford, who was one of the best teams in the Big South early on. Even though they finished the year on a down note, losing 4 out of 5, including a first-round exit in Brooklyn, but you gotta be excited for the future. I mean, one of the only teams in the conference that had all freshmen and sophomores in their rotation. And in addition, it had to have been a fun year to be a Duquesne fan just because of so many crazy comebacks over the course of the year. Off the top of my head, I know Eastern Kentucky, an overtime win. They took Fordham down to the wire on the road. George Mason, 1-point victory on the road. They had so many great moments. So overall, Duquesne was definitely one of the more fun teams to watch in the conference.
Yeah, and just like with some of these other teams that were picked low, it's going to be better for Duquesne next year than these other teams, but it still is kind of one last transition year before they really have to put their foot on the gas. The four transfers, Michael Hughes, Marcus Weathers, Frankie Hughes, Tavian Dunmartin, they're all going to be juniors next year. Carey's a sophomore. Lamar Norman Jr., who came out with some real fire in the last, I want to say, 4 games of the season, he's probably going to start now as a sophomore. Austin Rotrov and Amari Kelly, both going to be sophomores, and both will be dealing with injuries to start the year. So this is still going to be an extremely young team, but they should be hoping to make the NIT next year.
All right, one more note. I know we're running short on time, but I also want to add, I think the season might have played out differently if Sincere Carey wasn't hurt. He was dealing with injuries the whole way, so that hurt the Dukes this year. And at the buzzer, I'm going to go ahead and move on to number 10 in the A-10 preseason rankings, which were the Richmond Spiders, who they ended up finishing 11th, so the coaches just about got that one right. Richmond was 13-20, 6-12 in the A-10. And as we expected, the fans were not super happy with how the season played out.
Yeah, we can't talk about Richmond without talking about the billboard. Fire Mooney Mafia deciding to pay some money to throw up a billboard on a major highway in support of firing Chris Mooney. Unfortunately for them, it did not happen. And once again, depth was a huge issue for Richmond. Mooney has just not been a suitable recruiter beyond just getting some star guys. Now, those star guys were terrific. Grant Golden put up a nice little building block season off of his all-conference freshman year, and then Jacob Gilliard proved to be a star.
Yeah, you know, with those star guys, we knew that Golden and Gilliard, and also Nick Sherrod, who ended up getting hurt early on, but with that talent at the top of their roster, I thought they had a chance to maybe break through into the top half of the conference, but it seemed like their season ended before it even got off the ground. First game of the year, they fall to Longwood at home. A couple weeks later, they lose to a terrible Wyoming team. And then to round out their non-conference, they lost to Oral Roberts. Just a terrible non-conference slate. Overall, their season can just be summed up by inconsistency. This team at one point went on a 5-2 stretch, and during the stretch was when the billboard actually went up. But then they finished the season with 4 consecutive losses. That ended up pushing them into the Wednesday games in the A-10 tournament. And you just never knew. Like, they had a couple good stretches during the season, but they also had weeks at a time where they could not buy a win at all.
Yeah, I really think that Jacob Gilliard set himself up this year to have a shot at making first-team All-Conference next season. He's back. Golden, Nathan Kao, Jake Wojcik, they're all back. Nick Sherrod's going to be healthy. This team doesn't lose a ton, and if Mooney can just put together any semblance of a bench, something that he hasn't done for years, then they have a very real chance of finishing in the top half next year. I think Gilliard's going to blossom into a star next year, and he'll be on one of my preseason top 2 all-conference teams.
Yeah, Gilliard was fantastic, and I just think it's crazy. This is just off the top of my head, but I don't believe there is another team in the A-10 with 2 all-conference players to finish with a losing record. So that speaks to the lack of depth Richmond had. And at the end of the day, inexperience was part of it. They started 2 freshmen for quite a bit of the season. And, you know, things could change. Mooney's had some success in the past as a coach, even though you do have to go back a few years, back to TJ Klein's final season. And overall, it was just, the season ended up being about what most people expected. We didn't see them as a contender going in, although I do think the end of their season was pretty disappointing. All right, so now we will move on to the 9th place team in the A-10 preseason standings. And this team ended up surprising a lot of people at the end of the year. It's the St. Bonaventure Bonnies, who went 18-16 overall, 12-6 in the A-10, ended up getting 4th place, and they made a run to the A-10 championship game.
Yeah, so it was just announced that at the 2021 Final Four, Indianapolis will be serving alcoholic drinks. That will be the junior year for both Kyle Lofton and Asuna Shunahi, so the Bonnies fans, you know what, actually, they're serving alcohol at a basketball game. They'll probably show up even if the Bonnies don't make it. So get ready, Indianapolis. All the guys from Olean are coming to you. But in all seriousness, I just went on and on about how Sincere Carey's so special. Kyle Lofton showed a few flashes of special himself, too. And it's not quite the same given that the Bonnies now have a far better track record of success, having made multiple NCAA tournaments over the last decade. But it's rather more of a passing of the torch. We had this weird little in-between year this year where the torch went from Jalen Adams to Courtney Stockard. And now it's going to Kyle Lofton. And he showed us in 2 different games in the A-10 tournament that he can be the guy. That when other teams were just taking Stockard out of it, he could carry them through. And that's the first step towards getting yourself back into NCAA contention.
Yeah, no doubt about it. St. Bonaventure's freshmen, they had the best group of new players in the entire conference. Lofton, Oshunahi, and then you didn't mention Dominic Welch. I was very impressed by him, especially in the A-10 tournament. I see him as a guy that could eventually make an all-A-10 defensive team. And overall, St. Bonaventure's defense, that's what carried them through most of the year. It was really just a tale of 2 seasons, though. They went 1-5 the first 6 games while Stockard was out with an injury, and then finished 17-11. Honestly, I have to say, after they lost Mobley and Jalen Adams last year, and then made a run to the A-10 championship, do you think this was Mark Schmidt's best coaching job yet? I mean, he's done a great job for years at St. Bonaventure, but I did not see this coming at all for them to contend for a conference championship.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, and part of it is that Ladarian Griffin was just never truly healthy the whole year. They were a different team down the stretch when he was really starting to play well. They lost Stockard early in the year. Jalen Poyser was in and out of the lineup. Welch was in and out of the lineup. And he transformed these two incredibly raw freshmen into stars immediately. This was a great coaching job by Mark Schmidt.
And, I mean, he must have said something on February 9th. I think this was the turning point of the Bonnie season. They just got embarrassed at home by VCU, 85-55. And from that game on, they finished the regular season 7-1, and then won their first two games in Brooklyn. I don't know, they must have been motivated by that terrible game, because they turned the corner, just played some very good basketball down the stretch from that point on. And you gotta give him so much credit, working with a very young team, and especially going through the start that they had. For the Bonnies to come all the way back, and they were one shot away from going to the NCAA tournament. Just a great job by Mark Schmidt.
Yeah, and Griffin didn't get talked about much throughout the season. I think that was right around the point where he started to get healthier, and they're going to miss him a lot.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Stockard, he deservedly gets a lot of attention, but Ladarian Griffin, he was a good player for the Bonnies over the year, especially on the defensive end, I thought, so he will be missed next year. Alright, so now we will move on to number 8 in the A-10 preseason rankings. The UMass Minutemen, who went 11-21, 4-14 in the A-10, good for 13th place. And this was definitely my biggest miss of the season going in. I had UMass at 5th, so I had them even higher than the A-10 coaches. That didn't happen. Things fell apart pretty quickly once conference play started. They actually went 7-6, which, by the A-10 standards this year, that wasn't terrible for a non-conference season, including a win over Providence. But first game of the A-10 season, they lost to LaSalle at home. At first, we thought that might be a huge upset, because at the time, we thought LaSalle was terrible. It turns out that game wasn't very unusual at all, because LaSalle started playing better at that point, and that was really the moment where UMass's season was just heading in the wrong direction.
Yeah, and it's just really tough to have a good year when you get absolutely nothing in the second half of the season out of your star. Luan Pipkins ends up getting hurt and missing 7 games, which was a lot less than I thought. But clearly there was something wrong throughout the entire year, given that Pipkins announced that he was going to transfer just hours before senior night, taking the attention away from a teammate in Rashawn Holloway who had a very nice career. I think that there was definitely some internal strife, whether it was Pipkin's fault or not. Clearly not everything was okay there. And beyond that, we knew going into the year they needed Pipkins to carry them. Just too many other guys on this team were hot and cold players. And we saw guys like Carl Pierre and Rashawn Holloway just go ice cold for weeks at a time.
Yeah, UMass, I think part of the issue, we all bought into the preseason hype where they brought in a bunch of transfers. They returned one of the leading scorers in Pipkins. And sometimes, you know, when you have that many new guys all coming into the same team at once, you just don't know what you're going to get. Unfortunately, it just didn't click for the Minutemen. Although they did get a really good contribution out of Jonathan Laurent as a transfer. I'm thinking for UMass, they're losing a lot of these guys for next year. Hopefully they can turn the corner. That's kind of what happened to Dayton last year, where they had 5 players leave the program at once, and it ended up working out for a better, just a change of scenery for these guys, including Pipkins. That might help them out in their own careers as well. And I do think that the pressure might be on a little bit for Matt McCall. I still think he's a good coach. I think he's got a high potential for UMass. It didn't work out this year, though. Something interesting, I believe they were the only team in the conference that did not win a road game in conference play. And overall, UMass was one of the bigger disappointments this season.
Yeah, I want to end on this. I still believe in Matt McCall as a coach. I think this was the season of hell between injuries and inconsistency. there was clearly massive internal strife given that so many guys left. And maybe part of that was McCall's fault. We don't know that. We're not in the UMass locker room. But if he's going to be successful, he probably needed to clean house here. Carl Pierre and Trey Wood are going to be coming back, along with Jonathan Laurent, and that's about all that matters. UMass is not going to be great next year, but they should actually be better, even though they lose a bunch of guys.
Alright, so now we will talk about a team that is already very good and possibly getting even better next year. The VCU Rams, who were picked 7th in the A-10, and they proved everyone wrong. They went 25-8 overall, 16-2 in the A-10. I don't think there's any doubt about it. They were the best team from start to finish, although it did end poorly. We'll get into that more later. But VCU, just from start to finish, it was a great season. They had the most quality wins in the non-conference out of all A-10 teams. They beat Temple, Texas, and Hofstra. They should have beaten St. John's. That was a bad call at the buzzer. And after some early losses to Davidson and Rhode Island, they finished out with 12 wins to finish their non-conference season. And I don't know how they were picked 7th. I think I had them in the 7 or 8 range too, so I didn't have very high hopes for VCU, but I mean, looking back, this was a very talented team, and they proved it. They had the best defense in the A-10, and as the season went on, their offense picked up too. And they were just so tough to beat.
Hey, I don't know why you're talking about their defense picking up, because they had no all-defensive teams in conference. So, you know what, I think maybe we overrated VCU's defense this year, and given that the coaches felt that they deserved no spot on that team. Oh, wait, never mind. That actually happened. For those who didn't notice at the time, VCU put no one on the all-defense team, which made me completely rethink the entire system of how the A-10 does its postseason awards. Maybe we should just let the media vote on it like the NBA, because I almost considered, when we released our picks, just putting the 5 VCU starters. The VCU trademark defense is back. And we've seen another coach transitions go incredibly smoothly for the Rams. Mike Rhodes is the guy until some bigger program offers him a ton of money to not be the guy anymore. But for me, I'm most impressed by Marcus Santos Silva. Just a nobody after his freshman year. We were deeply concerned that VCU's rim protection and rebounding was going to be atrocious this year. It wasn't. Santos Silva was an absolute beast at 7.5 rebounds a game despite just 22 minutes. His backup, Corey Douglas, showed a ton on the defensive end. And if he can improve offensively over the summer, then those two are going to be a devastating 1-2 punch down low.
Yeah, overall VCU, they were probably the deepest team in the A-10, which was a big benefit, especially as teams started to wear down at the end of the season. We have to recognize Marcus Evans. He ended up probably being the best transfer to enter the conference. Early in the year, I wasn't that impressed by him. He was shooting a very poor percentage, turning the ball over a lot, but I think a lot of that might have had to do with the injuries he was coming off of, because by the end of the season, he was one of the top players in the A-10, and he earned a well-deserved spot on the first team. It's very unfortunate that he got injured in the first round, or VCU's first round of the A-10 tournament when they lost to Rhode Island, because he clearly was not at 100% in their tournament game against UCF. He didn't have that big of an impact, and they needed him out there to create some offense because they just could not score in that game. So hopefully he returns even healthier next year. I'd love to see what he can do at 100%, because apparently he wasn't even there, even at the end of this season. So, you know, overall, hats off to VCU. It was a very impressive season for them.
Yeah, and Isaac Van and Dariante Jenkins, they're both just going to keep getting better next year. So, before we go into the top six, I want to do a quick pause from the teams just to point out some stuff that people may have missed. We had a pair of coaching changes in the A-10. As we mentioned earlier, Maurice Joseph out at GW, replaced by Jamian Christian, who was the head coach at Siena. St. Joe's decides to part ways with Phil Martelli after a great career. something that I had advocated for on this podcast in January and then went back on later in the season. I thought he actually finished really strong and had one of his best coach games in years in the first round of the A-10 tournament when they beat Duquesne. But St. Joe's decides to turn things over to 76ers assistant Billy Lang, who was the longtime head coach of Navy. We've also had a ton of transfers going on this year. We knew about Pipkins early. The most notable beyond that being Eric Williams Jr. leaving Duquesne. Terry Nolan's out at GW. UMass lost a bunch of guys. Sean Mobley leaving VCU. And I don't know if I'm leaving out any big ones at this point.
You're only forgetting one big one, which I'm surprised because it just happened today. Frankie Policelli announced he is leaving the Dayton Flyers. He only averaged 1 point a game, so that's actually not a big loss for Dayton, but still, as a Dayton fan, I'm sad to see him go. Yeah, there are a lot of transfers. That always happens. It's unfortunately getting more and more common in college basketball.
Yeah, and then St. Joe's, they lost Lamar Kimball, who was hurt for most of conference play. Charlie Brown declared for the draft, but as far as we know, he could still end up coming back. He's somewhere between 80 and 100 on most available media draft boards. And then Jared Bynum has said that he might transfer, but has made it very open that he would consider returning to St. Joe's after he gets a chance to talk with the new coaching staff. So St. Joe's fans are afraid that he's going to be gone, but he very well could be back.
All right, before we move on, I also just want to add, since we're talking about coaching changes, I was very sad to see Phil Martelli leave St. Joe's or get relieved of his duties there. I understand it's a basketball move and the last couple years have been disappointing, but he's just been there so long. I mean, as long as we've both been alive, which is crazy to believe these days when coaches are constantly moving around. But I always thought he was a great guy, just very classy, one of the guys that you would want representing your program. And I understand, I mean, it's been a bad couple years since their last NCAA tournament appearance. I was hoping that if they were going to make this move, they would do something like Temple, how they announced that Fran Dunphy would be leaving at the end of the season. They announced that ahead of time. I think that would have been a better way to go about it, maybe, but at the end of the day, St. Joe's is trying to win games. They're looking in a new direction, so hopefully it works out for them, and I hope Phil Martelli, I mean, apparently he still wants to coach, and if he gets an opportunity, I'm sure he could turn a struggling team around, wherever it is.
Yeah, and I'm definitely not one to ever get sentimental about coaching changes. I think that that's something that you really have to just sometimes swallow and ignore. And I was also someone who really pushed back in January to make this Phil Martelli's last year. For basketball purposes, I actually wouldn't have done this. I thought he really figured some stuff out late in the season once they got healthy and once a few guys like Lorenzo Edwards started coming off the bench. I would have kept him around for one more year, seeing if he could put together a bench. And then St. Joe's fans were all up in arms. They didn't give the job to Jameer Nelson. Maybe the move would have been bring Martelli back, announce that he's got 1 or 2 years left, and that Jameer was stepping onto his staff, and maybe he would have been the ready-made replacement.
All right, you know what? We're going to call an audible here. I'm just going to skip ahead. St. Joe's was supposed to be the end since they were picked second in the A-10, but we're already on that subject. We might as well just finish talking about the Hawks. So they were picked second in the A-10, ended up going 14-19, 6-12 in the A-10. I mean, there's no doubt about it. They had to be considered the most disappointing team at the end of the season, just given that early on we thought they would be an at-large candidate. They smacked Wake Forest in one of their first games of the year. We thought that was a good sign for things to come, and it turned out Wake Forest was just terrible, so that didn't mean anything. And then they had an up-and-down non-conference, started out 0-4 in the A-10, and the last game of that losing streak was against Duquesne, where they had two injuries. Pierre-Francesco Oliva and Lamar Kimball both went down. And that's just been a theme for the Hawks. Injuries have killed them more than any other team the past few years. Charlie Brown, he had a great season for sure, but he couldn't do it all by himself. And as you did mention, they had a great showing against Duquesne in the A-10 tournament. They actually almost beat Davidson in the second round. That game was tied 60-60 before Davidson closed the game on a 10-0 run. And, you know, they almost made a run. They finished the season pretty strong, but it was just overall disappointing for the Hawks this year.
Yeah, and for Charlie Brown, he showed his great all-around scoring ability. I think that he's going to be an NBA player eventually, but I wouldn't have gone yet if I was him. I actually think he should transfer off somewhere. He doesn't have anything left to prove as the guy on a team. Ideally, he goes to a better squad where he's either the second or third best guy and can concentrate more energy on defense and rebounding. Now, he definitely doesn't listen to this pod, but right around the time that I went on a crazy rant about how he just doesn't rebound enough, he really started to pick that up. He ended up with about 6 a game. And we asked Joe Lunardi about it. He said part of it was just with so many big men hurt on St. Joe's, somebody had to grab the rebounds, and so Brown was doing more of that. But if he comes back to college next year, I think that number needs to be closer to 7 or 8. He's an absolute athletic beast, and he needs to play like one, but he was fun to watch, and he really has nothing left to grow with on the offensive end. Someone who does, though, Taylor Funk, his second foul that he took midway through the first half of the Wake Forest game, I think just derailed his entire season. Because he came out and hit 4 threes before the second media timeout of that game, and he was never the same after that moment. Something happened after that second foul that he never recovered from for 3.5 months, and if everyone who says they're going to leave leaves, he's looking like St. Joe's best player for next season.
Yeah, St. Joe's, they will go through probably more change than anyone else in the A-10, and that can kind of be expected when you go through a coaching change, so we'll see what happens. We'll see if their new coaching staff can turn this program around. Obviously, they've got some good history, a good fan base, so I gotta say, I did not expect St. Joe's to finish lowest out of the Philadelphia teams in the A-10, but here we are. It was just a bad year for the Hawks.
Yeah, and lastly, I obviously want Jared Bynum to come back just for sake of a better A-10, but it'll probably save me a little bit of stress over the next 3 years if he leaves, because if you go back and watch the tapes, and the tapes have been released onto YouTube, he travels like every time he goes into the paint, and the A-10 refs refuse to call an in-the-paint travel. They're only interested with calling them when you shuffle your feet at the three-point line. And if I had to watch 3 more years of Jared Bynum taking an extra step every time he went to the basket and never getting called for it, it was gonna cause me physical pain.
Oh, I gotta stand up for Jared Bynum. I'm just biased because I picked him for my A-10 all-rookie team, but I don't know, he might have gotten away with some. He was a fun player to watch, though, and St. Joe's would be better off if he stayed. All right, so now we'll circle back to where we were before the break. Picked to get 6th place in the A-10 ended up being the Dayton Flyers, who outperformed that as they went 21-12, 13-5 in the A-10, good for a 3rd place finish. Their non-conference record wasn't great, although they also had a very difficult schedule. After beating Butler in the first round of the Battle for Atlantis, they came close to beating the national champion Virginia Cavaliers, which was probably one of their most impressive games of the year. They then lost to Oklahoma, and then they also had a loss to Final Four team Auburn, so it was a tough schedule. Overall in the A-10, it was an up-and-down season. There were some good moments. Just for the most part, though, I think the main idea for Dayton this year, the fans haven't really gotten over, including myself. Dayton just blew almost every big chance they had. And at the end, they came pretty close to having a tournament resume, but they blew too many opportunities at the end of the day.
Yeah, and this was a very different team in March than they were in November. They ended up ending March with 2 terrible losses, as if it were November. But the talent was different. Obi Toppin, we have to start there. He went from just an athletic 6'9 guy who might be kind of fun this year to probably the most ferocious freshman dunker in the country in a normal year if the crazy Jeep slash alien Zion Williamson weren't in college basketball this season. And by all indications, it seems like he's probably coming back. He's not going to head to the NBA this year, as many Dayton fans feared. That certainly might change in the next few weeks, but knock on wood, it seems like we're fine with that. Jalen Crutcher really stepped up to become the leader and the go-to guy that he needed to be. And Ryan Mitchell was king of the role players, master of the cuts, and quite possibly an elite rim protector.
So I think Obi Toppin, for sure, he was the difference maker for this team. If he was just your average freshman, I think Dayton would have finished in sixth place as they were expected. We had no idea he would be this good. Already one of the best players in the conference. As you said, Ryan Mitchell, we didn't know what Dayton would get out of him as he was coming off two major hip surgeries. He ended up being one of the best players on the team, and I'm excited to see what he can do next year, another year removed from that injury.
Yeah, two things looking ahead to next year. Dwayne Cohill is a beast, and if he's not playing 20 minutes a game next season, then there is something seriously wrong, and the coaching staff needs to reevaluate what they're looking at. This guy is going to be an all-defensive team dark horse next year. And then we're trying to really go into a recap, but one thing I do want to point out real quick, Dayton loses Jordan Davis. He transferred to Middle Tennessee, closer to home. And that leaves a big hole at the shooting guard position. Well, right after the news came down that JD was transferring, E.B. Watson stepped into a pickup game and immediately hit three threes. So it seems like he might be ready to go take those minutes.
Yeah, E.B. Watson, definitely a name to watch heading into next year. Dayton is one of Dayton's biggest problems over the course of the season was depth. After Jerry Matos went down in the seventh game of the season, they mostly ran a seven-man rotation. And it seemed like at the end of games, that was the main issue, where Dayton would have good first halves, and then the last 5 minutes they would just get outscored by a significant margin. That ended up happening in the very last game of the season against Colorado in the NIT, so hopefully some added depth next year can make a big difference for the Flyers.
Yeah, insider info, E.B. Watson has a really nice shot, and that inside info might be me just seeing him during a pickup game.
Alright, so now we're going to talk about a team that has nobody with a nice shot, and that is Rhode Island, who is picked 5th in the A-10. They ended up going 18-15. 9-9 in the A-10. As we predicted, it was a very inconsistent season for the Rams. At one point this year, they lost 7 out of 8 games, but they finished the season very strong. They beat VCU twice, including once in the A-10 tournament. They also ended the season, or near the end of the season, they had a big win at UD Arena. And I think the main inconsistency can be summed up by Fats Russell, who you just don't know what you're going to get out of him on any given night. He had some very poor shooting nights early on in the year, but down the stretch, he had a 3-game period against Dayton, St. Joe's, and UMass where he was probably the best player on the court in each of those games. And then in Brooklyn, he kind of disappeared, so you never know what you're going to get out of him. He was super fun to watch, though. And overall, Rhode Island, it was kind of similar to Dayton the year before, although they were better than that year's Dayton team. They made a good run in the A-10 tournament, couldn't quite get it done, but I would definitely say they ended the year on a positive note.
Yeah, I don't know if it would have been more enjoyable to watch the Fats Russell that we did get down the stretch, where he had a few heat check games, or if he just never turned it around and we were sitting there watching to see if he ended up as the worst three-point shooter in NCAA history, which he was on pace to be partway through February. But beyond him, Cyril Langevin, an absolute beast. I still just don't understand how he got snubbed from first team All A-10. That was an absolute crime. He was the third best player in the conference this year. But Rhodey got through their transition year, probably showing better flashes than either Dayton or VCU did last year. Everybody's back, and as long as they can start to solve the just horrific three-point shooting that plagued them all season, the arrow is trending back up again for the Rams.
One guy I do want to point out, Tyrese Martin ended up emerging as Rhode Island's best freshman. He entered their starting lineup at the beginning of the conference season. I was very impressed by him in the A-10 tournament. If he could develop, that would be a big factor, because last year, for the most part, they just had their big three accounting for most of their production, which was Jeff Dowden, Fats Russell, and Lan Jevine, as you mentioned. If they could add Martin as a fourth option, which is kind of what he became in the A-10 tournament, I think that would help out the Rams quite a bit moving into next year. Alright, so now we will move into the top four for the A-10 preseason predictions. Picked fourth was George Mason, who ended up going 18-15, 11-7 in the A-10, and they ended up getting the fifth seed in the Atlantic 10 tournament this year. So George Mason, they were kind of the trendy preseason pick. I would say a lot of people saw them as a team that returned everybody from their previous year's team, which was decent. I think they went 9-9 in the A-10. Unfortunately, they got set back early. Jair Greyer got hurt at the beginning of the season, and then Otis Livingston kind of got off to a slow start. So they began the season very poorly, and I just don't think they ever quite recovered from that point on.
Yeah, so it was a weird season for the Patriots. They started as everyone's favorite dark horse, dropped three horrible games to start the non-conference, then became everyone's sexy dark horse again at the beginning of A-10 play when they smacked St. Joe's on the first night, and then just kind of settled into that fifth spot that, in all honesty, we probably should have realized that they were destined for from the beginning. Justin Kyer emerged as a star early in conference play. I thought he kind of dropped off a notch at the end of the season. Most people would disagree with me on that. And if they're going to elevate into the top four next year, he's just going to have to be the guy that he was in January for a whole span of 4 months. And I think he can do it, but he has to prove to us that he can. They're going to miss Otis Livingston. I'm not even a George Mason fan, but I'm still going to miss Otis Livingston. I just think he was a horribly underrated player in the A-10 throughout his whole career. Other than that, it was just a battle between what role player was going to step up on a given night. We saw some great flashes from Jordan Miller after his red shirt was burned. Jared Reuter was pretty solid in the games that he didn't get run off the court defensively. Most of the guys are coming back for Mason, so it'll be interesting to see if anyone gets more consistent next year.
Yeah, Mason did have more depth than a lot of guys. You mentioned Jordan Miller, that is one of the biggest mysteries to me, why he was redshirted to begin with. I thought he was a great player. Maybe they just didn't know what they had going into the season. Overall, you also mentioned Justin Kyer didn't do quite as well at the end of the season, and that wasn't just him, it was George Mason's whole team. They finished 4-6 to end the regular season, and their two wins were against Richmond and GW, so not too impressive there. And they had their moments. They were 7-1 in the A-10 at one point. They looked like a true contender. Didn't quite work out, and I think that's just a lesson that just because a team returns all of their key players from 1 year, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean the team's going to get a whole lot better. Even though they ended up improving on last year, I think, it wasn't quite as much as we all hoped. We'll see next year. I mean, they're in a similar situation, although they lose Otis Livingston. They are going to have most of this year's team back, so it could be a big year for the Patriots. I probably see them in the middle of the pack, though, just like they were this year. All right, so we have two teams to go. We'll start off with the team that was projected to get third, which was Davidson, who went 24-10, 14-4 in the A-10. They ended up getting second place, so the coaches just about got this one right. They lost Peyton Aldridge, who was the A-10 co-player of the year, and obviously that was huge. But before the season, we both had high hopes for John Axel Goodmanson. He delivered. He was the A-10 player of the year, had some great moments, including a triple-double. And overall, I don't think there's anybody else in the conference that could fill up the stat sheet quite as well as he did.
Yeah, Davidson has shown us that they will now just finish in third every season for the end of time. Although I guess they ended up slipping ahead of Dayton after they Yeah, they slipped ahead of Dayton to get the 2 seed. We spent the last few weeks thinking they were going to finish in third, but in a 3-bid league, that's going to be a good thing. This year, it meant an NIT bid. John Axel, we thank you for making us look smart. We were on the we were driving the bandwagon as hard as we could in November that he was going to be first team all conference, and he was even better than that. The battle for Davidson all year was inconsistency. I wouldn't be surprised if we find out that Kellen Grady was hurt for half the season, because he was not the same guy that we saw his freshman season. And I think we're going to see the guy that he should be next year. They're in good shape. Luke Frampton is kind of the perfect fit as part of a three-headed monster with them. Keyshawn Pritchett and Carter Collins can slide into that fourth perimeter slot. One concerning thing, Luka Brejkovic was great in the first month of the season. And then once we got into A-10 play, he showed his defensive deficiencies. He's going to really have to improve in the foul game.
Yeah, I think Brejkovic, he's got a high potential. I think part of it, he just got bullied around in the post when he had to face stronger opponents. So if he could put on some muscle for next year, that would be big. Luke Frampton was a great addition for Davidson. He fits into their system well. Is a good three-point shooter. He was also one of their better defenders, I thought. So it was a young team for them. And they do return these guys again. I mean, John Axel and Kellen Grady, they should lead this team. Kellen Grady, even though, I mean, I feel like his stats declined, especially his shooting numbers. And he was still first team all day 10, so I think that speaks to how good he was. You know, one thing I do want to point out, though, for Davidson, something that we talked quite a bit about earlier in the A-10 season, back around January, we thought they had the chance to put up a great A-10 record just due to their weak schedule. And they went 14-4, which, I mean, that's great, but that included losses against St. Joe's, UMass, and LaSalle. It's just hard for me to believe that they were 3 games against some of the worst teams in the conference away from going 17-1. And I think that just speaks to how hard it is to avoid bad losses when you're in a mid-major conference. Like, the A-10, I think, is notorious for having landmines where it can be tough to win on the road against certain teams. And unfortunately, Davidson was a victim to that this year. That cost them an at-large bid, just too many bad losses, and outside of beating VCU at home, they didn't really have any good wins either. Alright, so we have one team to go. The preseason favorite, who ended up proving us right in the very end, St. Louis, who went 23-13, 10-8 in the A-10. They got the 6th seed, but they ended up making a Cinderella run in Brooklyn. They cut down the nets and made it to their first NCAA tournament since, I believe, 2014, so ended up being a great finish to the season for a senior-led Billiken squad.
Yeah, so this season looked like a huge disappointment for SLU throughout much of January and February. Forgot to reset the Davidson timer. And then they ended up turning things around in March, really getting hot. You were right on that. I didn't believe in this team. Now, granted, maybe this still was a disappointment for them. At House Rick Built, they are a big-time Billikens podcast. They tweeted out about an hour ago that Travis Ford said that his goal is to make the Final Four with this program. So they clearly have higher aspirations than just slipping in as a 13 seed. But I'm going to call this year a success for SLU. They probably finished below preseason expectations, but to really overcome the adversity that they were dealing with. And for guys like DJ Foreman, who was a huge liability in late January, early February, to become a big strength for that team, it's a testament to how tight those guys were in the locker room and how good of a season Ford had coaching.
St. Louis had one of the more interesting seasons, that's for sure. They beat Butler, Oregon State, and on the road against Seton Hall in the non-conference, which was one of the most impressive collection of quality wins outside of maybe VCU. They also almost beat Houston, who ended up being a top 10 team most of the season. They then started 5-0 in the A-10, although they did play some of the worst teams the conference had to offer, so that wasn't that impressive by any means, but at one point they looked like a legitimate at-large candidate. Then the wheels fell off. They went 1-5, which ended in a 30-point loss to St. Joe's. The end of the season, they started to pick it back up, though, and this is when I started to have hope for them as a potential dark horse to win the A-10 tournament. And I think the key to their season, this is going to sound kind of weird, but they lost to Dayton and VCU back-to-back, but these were both on the road. They were very competitive, and to me, these games both showed that St. Louis had the potential to beat anybody. I think the big reason for this is they had the most seniors in the entire A-10. Most of the year, Javon Best was their best guy, but Tremaine Isabel in February, his shooting picked up. He was probably the best scorer in the conference from that point on. And I don't think the season played out quite as St. Louis fans or as anybody really expected. In the end, though, experience won in the A-10 tournament. And for them to win 4 games in 4 days, that was very impressive. Hats off to Travis Ford. That was just a fantastic coaching job in the A-10 tournament. And, you know, they're back. I think he has built their program back up. They had a couple very bad years where at one point they bottomed out as the worst team in the A-10. And, you know, you could say if they didn't win the A-10 tournament that it might have been a disappointing year. But I don't think you can be upset after they ended up making this run at the end of the year.
Yeah, I mean, things ended pretty great for the Billikens. They're going to miss Javon Bess and Tremaine Isabel, along with DJ Foreman. But Jordan Goodwin and Hassan French coming back means that it's not going to be a complete bottom out for the Billikens. They'll at least be in the middle of the pack next year.
Yeah, those two guys, Hassan French made the all-conference third team. I think Jordan Goodwin could see himself on one of the teams next year. They also have freshman Fred Thatch, who is, I think he got overshadowed because there were so many great freshmen in the A-10, but if he got more minutes, if he was on a different team, I think people would recognize him a lot more. He was one of the better young players in the conference. So, I think Travis Ford overall, he's turning this program back around. It's going to be a bit of a rebuild, but they should be back pretty soon near the top. Alright, so do you have any other banter about the A-10 recap, or are we ready to kiss this season goodbye and move on?
No, I just want to end this by just thanking all of our listeners through year one. We're not going to just disappear till October. We'll certainly be having a few podcasts coming between now and then. Definitely to recap some of the transfers in and out once those moves become finalized. Maybe if something crazy happens over the summer, we'll do that, but this is going to be the last regular podcast for a while, and a little sad.
Yeah, it's been a fun season, though. First year of podcasting the A-10, and it's definitely, I think, increased my appreciation for the conference. I definitely watch more of all the other teams than I ever have before, so that was great. And over the summer, I mean, I hope we keep this going with a few more episodes. Send us some ideas if you have anything you want us to talk about, because, you know, in the summer, there's usually not too much going on in mid-major basketball. Although I do think we're going to try to do a baseball episode at some point, because there are a couple major leaguers that are A-10 alumni, so that could be fun. Otherwise, though, thanks for a great season. It's been fun recording these episodes, just watching the A-10, and tweeting at all you guys online, so it's been fun.
Yeah, we'll definitely be back with at least one episode in the doldrums of summer, where I give a resounding speech to try to convince Fordham that they actually belong in the MAC. That's the MAC with two A's. I don't know how you're actually supposed to say it.
I think you say it like a sheep, like MAC.
Yeah, but then we'll also talk realignment, and if Fordham ever graciously leaves, or the A-10 finally mans up and just kicks them out, who would be a good fit within the conference? Do we go north for Vermont? Do we go south for Belmont? Does Belmont even want to join the conference? I think that'll be a fun discussion, so we know for a fact that we'll bring up that pod at some point in the next few months.
All right, so with that, I guess we will wrap this thing up. So thanks again for listening. You can follow us on Twitter at 3BidLeaguePod. You can also email us at 3bidleague@gmail.com. Those are both the number 3, by the way. And so with that, thanks for listening this year, and we will see you in November.
St. Joseph season comes down to this. Miles gets it.